north. We'll take a closer look at what's going on throughout the region this week. 7:45, Tammy Bobrowski talking with Grand Rapids Library, Children's Librarian Tracy Campa. She'll let us know about some new children's book recommendations. Taking a look at our current temperatures, we are at 3 degrees in Aiken, 6 in Hibbing, 7 in Bemidji. It is 3 in Grand Rapids and Brainerd, 5 in Park Rapids. For today, a mix of clouds and sun with highs near 16. Southwest winds 5 to 10, gusting higher. Cloudy overnight, lows near 4 above. And for tomorrow, mostly cloudy. Highs in the upper teens to low 20s with southwest winds up to 15 miles per hour. Chance of some light snow overnight with lows in the single digits. And looking ahead to Wednesday, mostly sunny with highs in the low teens. You can answer our question of the week. We want to hear about the things you make or have made to give as gifts. Send photos too if you have them. Text us 218-326-1234.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. A 69-year-old man died in a weather-related accident Wednesday morning in St. Louis County. Brian Pellender of Alden Township, west of Two Harbors, went outside to blow snow. His wife found him 45 minutes later underneath a large fallen tree. The St. Louis County Sheriff's Office says the high winds and wet, heavy snow downed the tree while Pellender was snow-blowing near it, fatally injuring him. A Grand Rapids woman facing a criminal vehicular homicide charge pleaded not guilty Wednesday morning in Itasca County District Court. 65-year-old Cynthia Cindy Martin hit and killed 19-year-old Carter Hathcock near Nashwalk before driving away the night of July 3, 2024. The plea is the latest in a year of legal moves in the case. Martin was first charged last November. Her defense has attempted to have the case dismissed, to suppress evidence, or move to another venue, all of which were denied by Judge Heidi Chandler. The next step is a pretrial settlement conference set for February 23rd. County Attorney Jacob Fotchold says there isn't a plea offer beyond Martin admitting guilt as charged.
Under those circumstances, it's not unusual for defendants to roll the dice, so to speak, and go to trial, knowing that the outcome that they would face at trial is similar to what we're offering for resolution.
Fotchold says there may be more legal maneuvering before the trial, such as Martin's defense again attempting to get the trial moved. The case has been under scrutiny from some members of the public because of Martin's prominent role in the DFL party. But Fotchold says the idea of politics influencing the case is, quote, absurd, and the case is moving at the same pace as any other under similar circumstances. Martin's defense did not return a request for comment by deadline. The nonprofit Kids Count on Us Bemidji is inviting the community to join elected leaders at a forum centered on affordability. The event will feature stories from community members who will share their experiences with the affordability of health care and child care. Elected officials and community leaders are expected to attend. The forum is 6 to 7:30 p.m. Wednesday at Beltrami Electric Cooperative. Those interested are asked to register in advance. MnDOT is sharing its plans for the Highway 73 corridor in Chisholm. The agency has been studying the one-mile stretch from Highway 169 to the intersection of West Lake Street and 3rd Avenue. It will share its findings and present a proposed final layout at a meeting Wednesday. The meeting is 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Chisholm Senior Citizens Building. Essentia Health Foston is hosting its 21st annual tree walk for hospice on Sunday. Attendees can stroll through decorated Christmas trees created by local organizations and community members and bid on their favorite tree through a silent auction. Crystal angel ornaments will also be available for purchase in honor or memory of a loved one. Funds raised from the event will support specialized care for patients and families served through hospice. The Foston Langby Lions Club will serve a free will donation breakfast from 10 a.m. to noon, and a remembrance program with a candle lighting ceremony starts at 12:15. Finding a mental health provider in rural areas is hard, but Minnesota researchers say it's much harder for communities of color in small towns. A new report lays out specific obstacles to care and solutions that show hope. The Center for Rural Policy and Development's latest report says lack of insurance, stigma, and trust issues are factors that complicate the issue. No matter the solution, Vice President of Research Marnie Werner says minority populations in small towns need to have agency in making mental health care culturally appropriate.
When a group looks at something that the larger population is saying, here, do this, and they're like, why? I don't understand this, or this doesn't fit with my culture or my understanding of the world or anything. I think that's the big thing, is to give groups the tools and then get out of the way.
For example, the report points to the Red Lake Nation reinventing their social services department using their own words, values, and beliefs. Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
You can hear the latest edition of the Up North Report today at 5:30 during All Things Considered here on KAXE. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Barr. It is 7:06. Thanks for listening to the Monday Morning Show. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Andrew DeZingle, your host for Headwaters. His request line theme is bands who have artists who went solo. So those solo songs. You can text in your suggestions, 218-326-1234. Support for KAXE comes from the Grand Rapids Farmers Market, now offering their winter market once a month with pickup at the Mesabi Trailhead building inside the Itasca County Fairgrounds. The next pickup date is Saturday, December 20th from 1 to 2. Pre-orders are required. More info at grfarmersmarket.org. We also thank Minnesota Power, an elite company, powering the region's homes, businesses, and industries since 1923. Learn more about its vision of a carbon-free future at mmpower.com/energyforward. Weather for today, a mix of clouds and sun with highs in the mid-teens. Southwest winds 5 to 10, gusting higher. Cloudy tonight, lows near 4 above. We continue with Morning Edition from National Public Radio here on KAXE.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Ami Martinez in Culver City, California.
And I'm Leila Faldel in Washington, D.C. Good morning. The White House is moving fast to tighten legal immigration reviews after last week's shooting of two National Guard members here in Washington.
The suspect is Afghan national Rahmanullah Lakhanwal, who's been charged with first-degree murder. He was granted asylum earlier this year after coming to the U.S. under a Biden-era program that facilitated temporary legal status for people who worked with the U.S. military in Afghanistan. In just a few minutes, we'll hear about what kind of vetting process he would have went through. We start, though, with more about the president's changes to immigration policy.
NPR's Jimena Bustillo covers immigration policy for us and joins me now. Good morning.
Good morning.
What are the changes the administration announced after the shooting?
We're going to be talking about a few different types of immigration processes. First, the administration paused all asylum decisions and also visa reviews for people from Afghanistan. An order from the State Department also pauses the special immigrant visa for Afghans, which is a specific program for those who helped the U.S. military and its allies. To be clear, the suspect was not on that visa, but like you mentioned, had been granted asylum earlier this year under the Trump administration. Second, Joseph Edlow, the director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, said anyone who applies for a green card from one of 19 countries on a list will face heightened scrutiny, and that list includes Afghanistan. Trump officials argue that those who came to the U.S. under former President Biden through these legal processes were not vetted properly. Still, in an interview with NBC's Meet the Press, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem said investigators have other leads.
But I will say, we believe he was radicalized since he's been here in this country. We do believe it was through connections in his home community and state, and we're going to continue to talk to those who interacted with him, who were his family members, talk to them. So far, we've had some participation.
So it's unclear what prior vetting could have uncovered.
Okay. What other restrictions is the administration talking about?
These changes came days after the administration said it would review refugee status of those already living in the U.S. A refugee is a person outside the U.S. who is forced to flee their home country due to violence, persecution, or other issues that put them in danger. The process can take years of vetting before someone is approved to enter the U.S. Now, the administration is reconsidering those already here. I obtained a memo issued by the Director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services late last month. That memo calls for reviewing all refugees admitted into the country under the Biden administration, essentially reopening their cases. They may need to be re-interviewed, and some may lose their status. The memo says the agency should, quote, only admit refugees that can fully and appropriately assimilate. Immigration advocates have called the recent changes on refugee reviews, visa, and green card applications deeply destabilizing to families already in the U.S.
And that's very broad. Refugees who can fully and appropriately assimilate. What about asylum cases from other countries?
Right. Asylum, a different process. And as I mentioned, all asylum applications were paused after the shooting. During that interview yesterday with NBC's Meet the Press, Noam said asylum reviews would restart when the agency has, quote, dealt with the backlog. There is a 1 million case backlog at USCIS. For now, the administration is likely to continue to scrutinize not just those who want to come to the U.S., but also those who are already here.
Thank you. That's NPR's Ximena Bustillo.
Thank you.
For more on the vetting process of Afghan nationals after the U.S. withdrawal in 2021, I'm joined by Peter Bergen. He is the Vice President of Global Studies and Fellows at the liberal D.C. think tank New America. Bergen is also a CNN security analyst and a professor at Arizona State University. Peter, I want to start off with this clip from Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday.
The Biden administration put people on airplanes, brought them to the United States without vetting them. They brought them into our country and then said they would vet them afterwards.
So, Peter, that's what the Trump administration keeps saying, that the shooting suspect was not properly vetted. Is that true?
I find that highly unlikely. I mean, the problem here is not a vetting problem. The problem is what appears to be, according to reporting by the Associated Press, somebody who was having some really severe issues once he got into this country. And by the way, a typical Afghan who claims refugee status doesn't come to the United States. I mean, everything that Kristi Noem said in that statement is mostly false as far as I can tell.
So you're saying that someone like a refugee that did not work with the U.S. government in Afghanistan, they wouldn't go through that vetting process?
Yeah, I mean, anybody who is claiming refugee status from Afghanistan is going to go through a pretty rigorous vetting process. And often, by the way, it's not like they got on the plane in Kabul and arrived, you know, in the United States. They usually went to a country like Qatar and often stayed for years while their applications were being processed. So, you know, anybody claiming refugee status, particularly Afghans or Syrians, is going through a very, very rigorous vetting process. And the idea that somehow they just got on a plane, they arrived in the United States, and that's it is untrue. By the way, this alleged Afghan shooter applied officially for asylum, he would have gone through another set of vetting during the course of the asylum application, which, of course, was granted by the Trump administration early in 2025. And, you know, that process can take a long time. I've had Afghan friends who've waited 10 years just to get an application for a hearing because we have very few asylum judges and just a vast number of cases.
Now, as we heard, the Trump administration makes the claim that the alleged attacker was radicalized after coming to the U.S. We haven't seen any proof of that. But I'm wondering, Peter, is there a way to vet or predict the risk of radicalization?
Unless you have a machine that can look into men's souls, I think the short answer is no. You know, if somebody can be radicalizing and they kind of keep it to that themselves. And by the way, when we see school shooters in this country or any kind of person who carries out some act of premeditated murder, you know, they often are fairly adept about keeping their plans to themselves, although they may say something that in retrospect becomes clearer to peers or family members. But there's no way to measure somebody becoming radical unless you can perhaps, you know, sort of survey what they're looking at on social media. And if they're, you know, reading a lot of ISIS websites, that would be an indication. But of course, you need a court order to do that.
Yeah. Now, President Trump says he also wants to suspend all immigration from what he called, quote, third world countries to let the U.S. system, quote, recover. What would a suspension accomplish?
Well, no one would come. I mean, the other issue I think here is that if they're really going to re-interview people who are already here, that's just a massive, massive undertaking. I've seen, I think, 190,000 Afghans have come into the country since the fall of the Taliban taking over in 2021. So who's going to do all that? As I mentioned earlier, there's a huge backlog already. There is a great need for asylum judges. There are very few of them, relatively speaking. And these hearings are already super backed up. So, I mean, the whole system is going to grind to a halt, which may be, kind of what the intent of all this is.
Peter Bergen, Vice President of Global Studies and Fellows at the liberal D.C. think tank New America, also a CNN security analyst. Peter, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Pope Leo XIV is in Lebanon, part of the first papal trip for the first American pope. He's meeting with politicians and leaders of the country's many religions as Lebanon continues to be targeted by Israeli airstrikes. NPR's Ruth Sherlock is following Pope Leo and has this report.
As the papal plane descends towards Beirut, Lebanese military fighter jets appear alongside us, protecting the plane until we land. On the ground, Pope Leo receives the warmest of receptions. He was welcomed by Lebanon's president, prime minister, and parliamentary speaker, and religious figures, and children offered flowers, bread, and water. All the way from the airport into Beirut, crowds gathered in the rain to cheer for the Pope. Leo moved in a closed Pope mobile, waving to the crowds through the glass. 30% of Lebanese are Christian, the highest proportion of any country in the Middle East. A dance troupe performed debke, a traditional Arab folk dance, and there were cannons, a light show, and cavalry. Lebanon has suffered in recent years from the conflict with Israel, economic collapse, and the explosion of mishandled chemicals at Beirut port in 2020 that devastated the capital. To this day, no senior Lebanese official has been convicted, and many in Lebanon's political establishment have been accused of vast corruption.
A culture of reconciliation, therefore, does not arise only from below.
Standing beside Lebanese President Joseph Aoun, Pope Leo seemed to challenge Lebanon's leaders to set aside their own self-interest.
The common good is more than the sum of many interests, for it draws together everyone's goals as closely as possible, directing them in such a way that everyone will have more than if they were to move forward by themselves.
Leo also encouraged Lebanon's Christians to remain in the country and for those who've left to return. This message was met with some frustration by Christians in Lebanon's south, whose towns close to the border with Israel were decimated in the conflict between Israel and Lebanese militias last year.
We want to stay, but we need a push. We need the help.
Shadi Saya, the mayor of the Christian village of Alma al-Shab, which still doesn't have running water or electricity, has written to Pope Leo asking for protection and help to rebuild. The Vatican so far hasn't responded to him or to NPR's request for comment. Saya says Christians in South Lebanon feel forgotten. Ruth Sherlock, NPR News, Beirut.
This is NPR News.
Thank you.
It is 7:20. Good morning. You're listening to the Monday Morning Show here on People Powered KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr. Sarah Bignell joins me now. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a chilly one out there.
It is chilly. You know, getting locked out of the building, that's always fun in the morning. Good way. Like, I usually spend the morning out in the woods,
mm-hmm.
But I was not dressed appropriately hanging out, but that's okay.
Yeah, a little door issue this morning.
Yeah.
I got in just fine, which is a good thing. But here we are.
Here we are. It's a Monday after a holiday weekend, and both of us got to spend some time with our adult children, which mm-hmm. is, I'm hoping you had a good weekend. I had a very good weekend with both of mine.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, so it was a nice, like, weather-wise too. It was a pleasant weekend up here, but you were south.
Yeah. Okay. So Wednesday, I had some pretty bad roads.
Did you?
For quite a while. Took 65 down to Mora, and just north of Mora, I could finally see pavement.
Okay.
On the road, otherwise it was just snow-packed. Until then, go slow go. And then where I was on Saturday in West Central Minnesota, probably 3 to 4 inches of snow on Saturday.
Okay.
And we just, you know, hung out in the house, and then coming back yesterday, there was, you know, just some icy patches here and there, but things were a lot better. So.
Yeah, that snow that we got on Tuesday, my daughter had drove up from the cities, and there were parts of like 35 when she was coming up that way that it was like traffic wasn't really moving at all.
Yeah.
And like how much ice she had built up on her car.
Yes.
I was like, oh my gosh, like it must have been that heavy enough or wet enough snow, like, that it's just melting. And
yeah,
it was awful.
My car is quite the mess.
Is it?
I know. Purchased some more washer fluid because you know, things were spitting, and yeah, it was a mess. And then on Wednesday, on my way down, like, I stopped for gas in North Branch, and I just about blew over. It was so windy.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We had like snow globe snow mm-hmm. throughout the weekend up here. It was really nice.
We did too.
Yeah. I was like, so I was decorating for the holidays, and then you'd look outside and there'd be like snow coming down. I'm like, oh, I love this.
Yeah. I love that light, fluffy, just like slow falling snow.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is beautiful. We had some of that on Thanksgiving Day too. And yeah, it was a good weekend. Got my house all decorated for the holidays. And I'm like, oh, it feels just cozy.
Yeah. And here we are now. It's December.
I know. Hard to believe. Like, November seemed to have just kind of whipped by.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. And the countdown to the other holidays is looming. And
yeah.
Hopefully everybody had a great Thanksgiving and was able to spend some time with friends and family. And you know, I like reconnecting with people. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots going on for the season. We'll be hearing more about that in just a few moments on events up north. Taking a look at our temperatures, we've got a range of 4 in Brainerd and Grand Rapids, and Aiken up to 8 right now in Bemidji. That is our range of temperatures. We can expect kind of a mix of clouds and sun today, kind of depending on where you are. Not too much sun, I don't think. Highs near 16 with southwest winds 5 to 10, gusting higher, cloudy tonight, cold once again, lows near 4, and tomorrow mostly cloudy, highs 19 to 22. We do have a slight chance of snow overnight in some places Tuesday night, just not much for accumulation, but lows in the single digits again. And then Wednesday, mostly sunny with highs in the low teens.
We receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. More online at hottubsmn.com.
We also thank Atchison Tire in Grand Rapids, providing service and offering tire brands like Bridgestone, Firestone, and Toyo. Serving the area since 1916, more at atchisontire.com. Well, it is time for events up north. We're going to take a closer look at some of the events happening across northern Minnesota this week.
The Friends of the Brainerd Public Library continue their Brown Bag Author Series today at noon with Minnesota author Will Weaver. He'll talk about his new book, Black Dirt, Bright Stars, a sequel to Power and Light.
Did you read Power and Light?
No, it's on my list of things mm-hmm. that I've requested from the library, and it just hasn't become available yet.
Okay.
So I'm hoping soon.
Yeah, I really liked Power and Light, and looking forward to this new book. And the Bagley Community Theater presents A Christmas Carol December 4th through the 6th at 7 p.m. plus Sunday, December 7th, 2 o'clock at the Bagley High School Auditorium. Tickets available at Ace Hardware in Bagley or at the door.
Brainerd Community Theater presents Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer December 4th through the 7th at the Chalberg Theater on the campus of Central Lakes College. Find tickets and showtimes at clcperformingarts.com.
And Central Lakes College has their Jingle and Mingle event Friday beginning at 5:30 at Roundhouse Brewery in Nisswa. Wear your favorite ugly sweater and listen to music from the Central Lakes College Jazz Orchestra. Donations will support CLC Music's student scholarships.
Great Tales Animal Rescue has Santa Paws, a chance to get your pet's photo taken with Santa on Saturday, December 6th from 10 to 2 at Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids.
Do you think your dogs would enjoy that?
No.
No?
Neville would go begrudgingly and would just sit and Russell, like he is, I can't imagine him sitting still for things. He would just be like too wiggly and like, I need to spin. Will you pet me? Pet me? You know?
Yeah. I think that sounds like my cat's nightmare.
Yeah. The sitting and...
Or just being, taken somewhere else, taken out of the house.
Yeah. But
I'm sure there are pets that would love to do that and a great way to support Great Tales Animal Rescue.
Yeah. Our wiener dogs we had, I could see them like digging a little thing. They liked, you know, they liked being on laps and, you know, posing and they dig it.
The Beltrami County Historical Society presents a special screening of historic Bemidji High School sports films on Saturday, December 6th at 11 a.m. at the Historic Chief Theater in Bemidji. This footage was recorded between 1947 and 1985. It's recently been digitized. Local sports broadcaster Joel Hoover will give context to each film.
There's a chili cook-off fundraiser on Saturday, December 6th from 4 to 7 at the Deer River Vets Club. All proceeds benefit the new Deer River Dog Park.
And Grand Rapids Area Male Chorus presents its Christmas concert on Sunday, 2:30 at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church in Grand Rapids. The concert includes a carol sing-along. Refreshments will be served afterwards.
Events Up North is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the Citizens of Minnesota. If you have events to share with our listeners, email psa@kaxe.org and look for Events Up North at kaxe.org each week.
We're going to listen now to our album of the week. We get to kick it off here on a Monday morning. It is by Haley Hendricks and Max Garcia Conover. It's called What of Our Nature. This is the second collaboration between these two, and the songs were done in the spirit of Woody Guthrie. It was recorded to tape at a Vermont studio. The song we're going to hear from them is called Fluorescent Light.
They sold it on a cross, they sold it on a curve, and now it feels so cheap, not deeper. They sold it as a little light bulb, they sold it as a sticker, and when that feels cheaper, well, it doesn't feel much deeper. There was an ancient light, there was an ancient song. Now something isn't right, now we live in fluorescent light. They sold it as a muffin, they sold it on TV, they sold it as a tabloid just to try to get the best of me. They caught us in the bleakness, they caught us on our screens. Brilliant minds go to college just to study marketing. There was an ancient light, there was an ancient song. Something isn't right, now we live in fluorescent lighting. Most of all our lives under the same line, in schools and prisons and dying. Yeah, it's all in fluorescent light. They sold it as an olive. They sold it as a bomb. They sold it as self-protection while the innocent children run. Grown men want to profit with their fingers on their triggers. But when life feels cheaper, then the dead have to dig deeper. There was an ancient light. There was an ancient song. Now something isn't right. It's the time of fluorescent light. To get so bright, I turn off my phone.
From our album of the week, that's Haley Hendricks with Max Garcia Conover. Song was Fluorescent Light. The album What of Our Nature. We'll be hearing more about it, or more of it, yeah, throughout the week here on KAXC, and you can let us know what you think. Text us 218-326-1234.
And I was wondering if there'd be any yelling in the song, because Haley has that one song where she's talking about needing to start it in garden.
I need to start a garden. No, yeah. This one very mellow.
Yeah, that was
very chill.
A very different take, but I like it. I like her voice.
Yeah.
So let us know if you have thoughts about her album of the week. You can text those in. We like hearing about that. 218-326-1234.
Also, our question of the week.
Oh, yes.
Sarah, I know you'll have good answers to this.
What is it?
We want to hear about the things that you make, or maybe things you've made in the past to give as gifts.
Oh, yeah. When my children were very small, I remember when felted slippers mm-hmm. were like the rage. I literally made felted slippers for like everyone in like the family.
Yeah.
And I have a picture of my son, because he was a baby. Like, mm-hmm. one of my cousins had like giant feet, and like the pre-felted, you know, because you
make it big.
And then you throw them in the washer with like, I have had like these felt balls anyways, yeah, that kind of beat them up to like felt them down. Anyways, was like twice the size of my son. It was just like so funny. But so I did that. That was a lot of fun. And I don't know. I like doing smaller things, so like wreaths. I really like making birdseed wreaths. I'll do that. And I made a quilt one year for my son. I think I was telling you about that. I did a Mario quilt that was all one, like they ended up being one by one squares. So yeah, I did like the Mario and Luigi and the question mark and the
mushroom.
And it
looked like the old...
The 8-bit.
8-bit Nintendo,
yes,
screen, yeah.
Yeah, so that was quite the project. So I've done smaller projects and massive ones, but it's fun to make gifts for people.
Yeah, I love the idea of it. I am not a very crafty person. One year I did make caramel corn for like the extended family gathering, but that gathering ended up getting canceled because of icy roads.
Yeah.
And it was like we weren't going to get together for like until the summer, because it's like people were, you know, it's far away and stuff. So I ended up with a lot of caramel corn.
Yeah. That sounds like delicious, though.
The kind you make with puff corn.
Oh, nice.
Really,
that's so good. Yeah.
And then I drizzled it with a little chocolate. Oh. But yeah, ended up with a lot of that myself.
So did you gift it to neighbors and everybody who would,
No, because I'm selfish that way.
You just consumed all of it.
It lasted a while.
Yeah, that sounds tasty, though.
Yeah. So I can maybe do things like that. When I was a kid, sometimes I would get like little crafty kits.
Oh, yeah.
Like ornament kits and stuff. And then those sometimes I'd give away to neighbors and friends, or mm-hmm. keep one for myself and then give the rest out.
And like, you got an embroidery pillowcase set.
I did.
That I ended up finishing for you.
That's right. Yes. That was one of our gifts when we did more of like random dice game stuff for our KAXE party, and you ended up with my half-finished pillow embroidery kit.
And I finished that and sent it with my daughter to college.
Well, very good. So I'm glad it's getting used, because it had sat in a box for years.
Did it? Yeah.
Yes. I was probably like 12 when I got that.
Okay. So it's vintage.
Yes.
So let us know if you're a crafty person or have a tradition of making gifts for people. We'd love to know what you're up to this holiday. Oh, maybe they don't want to share what they're doing this year. Maybe like what have you done in the past?
Yeah, I did think about that. Yeah. We don't want to spoil the presents.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, making things. I think people are getting more into that just because everybody has so much stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
like, yeah, especially things like people can consume, I think, are great things.
Yeah.
Like our business manager, Penny, said that she and her husband have done cookie trays ever since they were first married, you know, for people just things like that. Or if it's something, you know, special, if you do special woodworking or quilting or those kinds of things.
Yeah. I had an aunt who's now passed. She'd like tatting, you know, like the
like making lace kind of stuff.
Yes. And she would make these beautiful like snowflakes and like she'd starch them. So they were like, and every year you'd get everybody would wait, or we'd get little like delicate angels.
Yeah.
So I have a whole box full of ornaments that my Aunt Diane made over the years. And I'm like, oh, look at that. They're lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now that she's, you know, has passed, it's nice to have like those memories of like, oh.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Like, oh, you know, I used to look forward to that.
Yeah. So let us know about the things that you've made. Text us 218-326-1234. We did hear from Lisa, who says it's been a few years, but I've made cashew brittle to give. It's amazing.
Okay. I don't know that I've ever had that with like peanut brittle is usually but I bet you cashew like those because that's a little creamier than that. It's probably really tasty.
It's really good.
Yeah. Well, good. Let us know. Again, that phone number to text 218-326-1234.
It is time for best wishes. We're going to do our best to wish friends and neighbors happy birthday, happy anniversary. We get to start with yesterday, which was still November 30th.
Yep. And Darla Nelson was celebrating her 69th birthday yesterday from Grand Rapids. And Sarah McCrosty had a birthday in Bemidji.
Today is December 1st. Happy 35th wedding anniversary to Ann and Steve Fisher from Brainerd. Steve Bratt, happy 68th to you in Grand Rapids. And Jill Jevney, happy 66th in Jacobson. Our best wishes to you all. If you have birthday or anniversary greetings to share, you can text those in. Usually a day or two in advance is helpful, but not necessary. 218-326-1234.
Yep. And you can even send a little message. We sometimes get those lovely little messages from folks of like, oh, wish my, you know, darling husband a beautiful anniversary or whatever.
Yeah, whatever you want to say.
Yeah. Do I got some music for our birthday and anniversary folks?
We do. I picked a song. It's maybe not quite seasonal, but it's fun. Well, you could make your own out of snow. It's called Popsicle.
Okay.
And it's by Juliana Hatfield.
And that's why I got nothing much.
New music from Juliana Hatfield is called Popsicle here on the Monday Morning Show on KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Sarah Bignall.
And we receive support from the Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids featuring Martini Monday each week from 5 to 8. More information is available at timberlakelodgehotel.com.
We also thank the First State Bank of Big Fork with branches in Big Fork and Kellyer, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking at its best since 1912. FSBBigFork.com, member FDIC.
We also receive support from the state of Minnesota.
We were talking about our question of the week, the things that you make or have made for holiday gifts. And we heard from Susan and Cotton, who said, I am not crafty, but both my sisters are very artistic. And when their children were young, they would send me some lovely crafts their children made as Christmas gifts. Many of those are still ornaments on our tree. Those children are now having children, so I await a new set of beautiful crafts.
And we heard from Susie, who said that there was a year when I was unemployed and I did 15 rounds of Christmas cookie baking and everyone got cookies that year. And she says, hopefully she will not have to do that again, happen, you know, anytime in the future. So,
yeah,
that's a lot of cookies. That is
that's a lot of cookies. And these days with the price of butter.
Yeah.
And well, eggs have come down a bit, but, you know, some of the things that you need for cookies are not so inexpensive anymore.
No, that could be very costly, but
it could be that many cookies anyway.
That is, yeah, wow.
But that is a very nice gift.
And then my brain's like, where are you storing 15 dozen? Like, how? Wow.
Yeah.
I have so many questions.
I would get, you know, you could get some nice little containers.
Mm-hmm.
Those, they make those nice holiday themed, like, Tupperware or Rubbermaid, containers.
Yeah. Yep. I've gotten those a couple of times that have like the little decorative, like mm-hmm. around the edge, they have little wreaths or mm-hmm. little trees or whatever.
Yep.
That. We also heard from Liz, and she likes to make toffee every year for friends and family. Sugar, butter, pecans, and chocolate. She says, so easy and delicious. Just heat a 300 degrees or just heat to 300 degrees in the big cast iron pot. And toffee seems kind of complicated, but according to Liz here, it is easy.
It's not.
Yeah. That sounds tasty as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, lots of food items people could make. We want to hear all about them. Craft items, things that you maybe are planning to make, but if you don't want to give that away for the holidays, I understand. But maybe you've done some things in the past or have photos mm-hmm. to share. We'd love to see those too.
Yeah. And I have an aunt who makes it's a Christmas tree, but it's like a popcorn ball, but it's like a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
And then it also has like gumdrops in mm-hmm. it, you know, so it looks like lights or like ornaments. And like my family, we fight over them. And then my Aunt Lori heard that like we were fighting over it. So then she gave us a second one. So we'd get two. So like the kids could have one and like Paul and I could have one. But
yeah,
it's so good. And I don't know like what popcorn she uses. And I'm like, what do you put in these? Because they're so tasty. And she's like, it's just a, you know, basic recipe. And mm-hmm. I'm like, no, you do something special. But maybe it's the love that she puts into it. You know,
I think the love is a key ingredient in these things.
Yeah. I love it. So you have those holiday traditions. This has been fun from hearing from folks again. The number to text, 218-326-1234.
Support for KAXE comes from Sanford Health with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.
And you can listen to the Season Watch pod. It's hosted by Charlie Mitchell, Heidi Holton, John Latimer, and a rotating cast of characters. That's Season Watch pod for the curious, filled with delights of nature. Each episode comes out on Thursdays. Those have been so fun to listen to, that they're you know, we're digging into different topics of nature, you know, whether we're talking, you know, owl pellets to mm-hmm. you know,
the golden colors of the tamaracks, and we talked about northern lights. We heard a rebuttal from Charlie's mom.
Oh yeah,
that was fun.
Yeah, so if you haven't checked it out, highly recommend doing so. That's a great new podcast that I have thrown into my rotation on my walks when I'm outside in nature.
Yeah, available where you get your podcasts. We also air it during the weekends, mm-hmm. 1:30 Saturday afternoons, 10:30 Sunday mornings.
Yeah, check it out.
Support comes from the First National Bank of Coleraine since 1906, serving the needs of the community and working with their friends and neighbors with branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids. More information at coleraine.com. Member FDIC.
Coming up at 9 o'clock today, it is Headwaters and our host,
Andrew DeZingle.
Oh, and you know what the question is?
Request line is bands that are artists known for bands and then they went solo.
Okay.
So that's what we're looking for.
Artists. Oh, gotcha. All right. I'm trying to think now. I'll have to ponder that a little bit.
Text us 218-326-1234. I just realized we have not done our daily dose of phonology.
Oh, no.
The phonology, the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. Here's John Latimer.
On today's date, December 1st, 2005, I spot a raven alongside of the road today, and he is pecking at and ultimately picks up a crabapple-sized chunk of salt that was discarded or actually thrown out by the sanding truck. And I can't even imagine what the raven would do with that much salt. I would think that if the raven ate that, it would kill it. It would probably make raven jerky. I'm not even sure. But he thought he had a prize, and he flew off with it. Good luck.
That's our daily dose of phonology. We'll have more phonology tomorrow morning. John Latimer will have his latest observations at about 7:20, plus maybe some student reports, although they were off for Thanksgiving, so yeah. Maybe not quite as many. I think there's probably still some open water or water that did not get affected by the snow because, you know, John wants to skate.
Yep. So we'll get the report on that. I'm sure they'll be talking to Tornado Bob, too, to see, the possibility of ski trails, you know, do we have enough snow here that we can get out and maybe do some skiing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So tune in for that tomorrow morning with our phonology day with Heidi and John.
It's time now for What We're Reading. It's our show all about books produced by our staff librarian, Tammy Bobrowski. Today we'll hear book recommendations from Tracy Campa, children's librarian at the Grand Rapids Area Library.
I'm Tammy Bobrowski, producer and host of What We're Reading. Today we hear from Grand Rapids Area Library Children's Librarian Tracy Campa with some thoughts on the growing availability of Native American authored picture books.
I can read everything.
About 10 years ago, I partnered with a local American Indian educator to not only update our American Indian collection, but to make sure that the books we carry for children were the best they could be. I withdrew books by non-Native authors that were telling Native stories. I moved books about the earth and creation out of folk tales and into the religion section. I tried to make sure that each book we kept was in a respectful place. Cleaning up what we had, however, turned out to be the easy part. Finding quality books and stories to round out our collection was nearly impossible. Most of what we found, I could only get through Birchbark Books in Minneapolis, which funneled books from a variety of First Nations publishers out of Canada. The books were fabulous. Getting them was difficult. And pre-reading them was nearly impossible. So I purchased many titles without the benefit of review. That has all changed. A handful of years ago, HarperCollins introduced a new imprint called Heartdrum, which publishes only books by Native authors and illustrators. Heartdrum is curated by the outstanding author Cynthia Leidich Smith, whose books I have reviewed on What We're Reading. This national focus on substantive literature by Native authors tells their own stories, highlighted other smaller publishing houses, some of which had been doing this work for years, but were quite invisible on a computer search. A good example of that is Black Bears and Blueberries Publishing out of Cloquet, owned by Ojibwe authors Elizabeth Albert Peacock and Thomas Peacock. Today, thankfully, I can find fantastic quality literature by American Indian authors. I was struck by this change when I opened a recent book order and realized I had 6 new picture books by Native American authors, like it wasn't even a big deal. It is a big deal, and I welcome this new world. So if you're looking for some great new picture books, let me recommend I Am Not a Costume by Maria Desjarlais, an Ojibwe author with ancestral ties to both North Dakota and Red Lake. This is an outstanding primer on cultural appropriation and a good book about finding and using your voice. Remember Who You Are by Leona Prince and Gabriella Prince, both members of the Lake Babeen clan of the Dakel people in Canada. This is an empowering reminder of the rich and vast culture into which today's Indigenous children are born. Charlotte's New Moccasins by Jen Mudahi, a Métis author, who tells the tale of young Charlotte, who has outgrown her beloved moccasins and heads to her grandma's house for new ones. Not only is it a lovely story about family and tradition, but it includes fantastic back matter about the importance of moccasins, both in the past and today. Moon Song is by Caldecott medalist Michaela Goad, a member of the Tlingit Nation. A companion to her summer-centered berry song, Moon Song finds a girl telling a winter story to her young cousin. The journey ends in the glorious light that can be found on a cold winter's night. And They Walk On is by Kevin Millard, a member of the Seminole Nation. You might remember his marvelous book, Fry Bread, A Native American Family Story. His new book is an ode to those who came before us and leave before us. A young boy remembers his grandma and wonders, now that she has walked on, where exactly has she gone? He finally realizes that we are all walking on and will always be walking together. It is a beautiful tribute to not only those loved ones who have walked on, but to their ever-present connection to those still here. Grandmother Moon by Wunyanatsu Lam Kaysen, a member of the Skaticoke Nation, shares the story of a granddaughter who spends weekends with her grandma on the reservation. On their weekly journey, her grandmother tells her cultural stories, like the story of Grandmother Moon, and how she is always watching over her people, protecting them through all 13 moon phases of the year. I recommend any and all of these titles, and I'm thrilled that they are now so readily available.
This is What We're Reading, and we're hearing about new book recommendations from children's librarian Tracy Campa. Up next, we hear Tracy's review of middle grade books by Minnesota writer Kate DiCamillo and Kate Messner.
Nobody can write a fairy tale like Kate DiCamillo. She creates characters that you cheer for and builds a world for them that, while it may be dangerous, is also full of hope. Always hope and light. The third book in her Nerendi Tales, Lost Evangeline, feels like a story you may have heard before, in all the best ways. A poor shoemaker discovers a tiny girl in the toe of his boot. He names her Evangeline and raises her as his daughter. His wife is not at all happy, but Evangeline and the shoemaker are really quite happy. As soon as the opportunity arises, of course, the shoemaker's wife sells the girl to a man who overheard her beautiful singing voice. Evangeline, though, is not only smart, but she's also clever. She manages to escape a series of tough situations with the help of a cat and a boy. When she works herself back to the shoemaker's house, he is gone, off to the sea to look for his daughter. His wife remains at home, alone, counting the gold coin she received for the tiny girl. Evangeline heads to the sea to find her father. Will they ever reunite? Not by the end of the story, but remember, this is a DiCamillo. The ending is full of hope and especially light. A welcome familiarity and a reminder that stories will always go on are hallmarks of the beautiful Lost Evangeline, part of the Nerendi Tales by Kate DiCamillo, with illustrations done by the incomparable Sophie Blackall. I am knee-deep in my search for Newbery-worthy titles of 2025. These months leading up to the announcement find me scrambling to read what I've somehow missed. I just finished one book that, in my eyes, is a strong contender. We first meet Finn Connolly in the time between the cemetery vandalism, as reported in the newspaper, and his first court appearance. He is charged with seriously damaging a headstone and never denies that he alone is responsible. Finn is surprised then when he is offered a deal by the daughter of the woman whose stone he overturned. If Finn manages to summit 46 peaks in the Adirondack Mountains during the summer, the charges will be dropped. Finn is reluctant. Obviously, his mom can't take that much time off work to go with him. But Kelly, the daughter, assures Finn that all is taken care of. Finn will be accompanied by a series of chaperones, each of whom has reasons, not known to Finn, to want to spend time with our juvenile, not really delinquent. Oh, and he has to bring the dead woman's dog with him. Hike after hike after hike after hike, the reader is witness to Finn's transformation, and Finn's story is slowly revealed. The story involves heroism during 9/11 and subsequent mental health and addiction battles, feelings of abandonment and unworthiness, a journey that includes his dad's ashes, the healing properties of nature, not to mention an absolutely perfect ending. And there might be an incident with a bear, but I'm not going to ruin that for you, except to reassure you that the dog probably doesn't die. Told in verse and sprinkled with both photographs and cookie recipes, this is my first 5-star read of 2025. Please, please don't miss The Trouble with Heroes by Kate Messner. And then gift a few dozen copies to all your closest friends of any age. Happy reading!
You can find a list of Tracy